Tess Ellul, Monday the 12th of September, as a last minute delightful change to the advertised. Rob, well, I'm sorry for Rabbi Eisenberg, Mitzchem, he'll rejoin us. Rabbi David Kaplan on Parshas Ki Tzeitse.
Morning. It's always a big cover to speak for the Torah way for start your day. And I was just wondering this time, you know, Reb Dudi did not know that I was in town, and the roster was already arranged. Now here I was, and I figured, okay, this time it's not going to happen. I think the man has some sort of radar or Ruach HaKodesh or something. In Siyata Dishmaya, I was walking Lel Shabbos. It was about a quarter to 11 at night. There wasn't a soul on the street. One person happened to come walking past me. I was walking, approaching the shul here. It was Reb Dudi, and he has that look. He gave me that look. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm not intimidated because we both know that this is not going to happen, right? Then he says to me the next morning, he says, I think I might have a cancellation for Monday. I'm leaving today. I'm leaving at 12. How he managed, I think it's a Pashas Siyata Dishmaya. So I just want to speak a little bit about Parshas Ki Tzeitse, because what we find in you have Parshas in the Torah, Mishpatim, Kedoshim, where you have a lot of mitzvahs that are packed into the Parsha. Parshas Ki Tzeitse, not only have a lot of mitzvahs in there, you have a number of mitzvahs here that are the most bizarre mitzvahs in the Torah. And they're not only you have the regular list of mitzvahs, over here you have a few mitzvahs which are the ones that stand out as being something about the mitzvahs, what we would call, for lack of a better word, we call it somewhat strange. So the first one is the entire idea of the Ephes Tor, that the man goes to war. And everybody knows, I'm not going to elaborate on the details of the mitzvah itself. But what's really going on here, people are very disturbed. There's a machlokas rishonim about whether the Bia Rishona takes place at the battlefront or not. But be that as it may, what's really going on here? Man goes out to war, we're talking about the tzaddikim who are going out to war, and he's involved in what seems to be the most base type of human desire. So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, it's worth having a look at the words inside. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says that at the time of Adam HaRishon, after the Chet of Adam HaRishon, there were certain neshamas that were taken captured by the Sitra Achra. Neshamas that were taken captive. And these neshamas, the names of these neshamas, were called Yefas Tor. And they were the ones who are destined later on in history to rejoin Klal Yisrael as Ger Tzedek. That's what the Or HaChaim says. And what happens is the Jewish man goes to war, and he sees a young lady, and she's a Yefas Tor. Now, is it because these are the tzaddikim who go to war? They were the ones who were sinless. He sees a young lady, and he's going to rescue her neshama. He's going to bring her neshama to Klal Yisrael. The only problem is it the neshama, or is it not? What's the acid test? The acid test is he brings her home, goes through the entire process of her becoming unattractive, and then if he still has a yearning for her, that is a sign, that is a siman muvak, that she is a yefas tor. He marries her and brings her into the fold, into Klal Yisrael. There are many questions on the Or HaChaim, what about the male gerim, and so on and so forth. I'm only telling you what the Or HaChaim says. But there's a message for us in the Yefas Tor, is that when the Torah comes along, and the Torah says, Lo dibra Torah ela kineged Yetzirah. The Torah is talking about, against the Yetzirah. Pardon me. The Torah says, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not permit her, Yisaedah v'Yisr. I mean, you know, that's endless. So a person takes a look, there's bacon, right? And make it mutter, because if you don't make it mutter, you're going to eat it anyway, so let's make it mutter. But you see that you never find that. You never find that anywhere else in the Torah. Chafetz Chaim talks about in Shiras HaLashon, because people say, well, I can't avoid speaking Lashon Hara, because Lashon Hara, it's not practical, it's not realistic. I can't not speak Lashon Hara if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have felt that it's not realistic, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have made it mutter. So here you see what looks like, oh wow, what an opportunity. Go to war, and you can take Yefas Tor. To the contrary, this isn't the good news, this is the bad news, so to speak. That means that if the Torah didn't matter something, that saddles us with responsibility. That means that we're capable of fulfilling it. If a person is in a situation where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is the line, this is what could be expected of a human being. Anything on the right side of the line, you're expected. This is the one exception on the left side of the line, that's the one exception. It's not the rule, it's the exception. And therefore it saddles us with the responsibility. There was a case, I don't know all the details, something happened with money. Could you imagine people fighting over money? And a man, I think it was in the United States, he had asked his friend, it involved $100,000, and he had asked a friend of his to invest it, deposit, I don't remember exactly what the details were, but cancer, he lost the money. So he came to, they ended up in a din Torah, and then they went to court. He wanted to go to court with him, the guy wasn't paying him. So he went to Rav Yashiv Zatzal, and he asked Rav Yashiv about suing him and the everything that it involved. So Rav Yashiv said to him, what's going to happen if the court rules he has to pay you? If the court rules he has to pay you, what's going to happen? He said, well, then they're going to publicize it. It's going to be in all the newspapers. This is back in the day where they had newspapers, newspaper television, that sort of thing. And before all of the wonderful technological advances that we've been blessed with today. And he said to Rav Yashiv said, well, if you're going to put it in the newspaper, they're going to put it on TV, they're going to publicize it, it's going to be a Chil Hashem. So he has to pay you money, but you don't have the right to create a Chil Hashem, and they're also going to put him in jail. That is certainly not part of halacha, therefore you're not allowed to take him to court, whatever the situation was, because the law is going to result in Chil Hashem. Rav Yashiv was very, very machmir on Chil Hashem. Now, a person takes a look and says, what's that kid? That's my $100,000. That's my $100,000. He's got my $100,000. Yeah, but the Torah says, the Torah, Rav Yashiv, Paskin, you can't do it. You can't do it? Yeah, but no, there are no excuses. That means we're capable of doing it. Why? Because if we weren't capable, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have said, here there's an exception. Here you have an exception. Since the Torah didn't make the exception, we say we're capable. Number one. Number two, you go to the Ben Sora Umorek, which is always very, very, very troubling for people. And then the Torah says in Pasuk Tes Zayin, the Torah talks about in Pasuk Yud Ches, the Torah talks about Ki Yela Ish Ben Sorer Umorek. Also, one of the most, okay, he's a bar mitzvah boy who happened to eat a little bit too much meat, drink too much wine, and the parents would take to the basin, and they're going to put him to death, and so on and so forth. So Chazal say, obviously, Ben Sorer Umorek Lo Hoya Lo Yia. There never was, and there never will be. There's one opinion in the Gemara, Rabbi Yonason says, I saw a Ben Sora Mora V'yashavti al Kivro. I actually sat on his tombstone. Rabbi Kiva Eger over there talked about, right now, a lot to sit on tombstones. You know, it goes into the whole discussion what al means. I did see once in the Margolios Ayam that Rabbi Yonason in the Gemara there in Sanhedrin was a Kohen. And Rabbi Yonason was being facetious when he said, I saw a Ben Sora Mora and sat on his kever. And just like I'm a Kohen who can't sit on a kever, so too, there never was, never will be a Ben Sora. So why are we giving it? Drosh v'kavol schar. Learn it, you're going to be rewarded. Now, the plain meaning, the surface meaning seems to be, learn it, you'll be rewarded, means, well, you know, good, every word of Torah is a mitzvah. You learn 200 words, oh, that's an interesting thing. That's a little different than an ox goring a cow. This is interesting, you know, maybe, you know, let's learn some Ben Sora more. Drosh v'kavol schar. So, drosh v'kavol schar doesn't mean simply learn it and you get rewarded for every word of Torah. Drosh v'kavol schar means study what the Torah is trying to communicate over here. And if we study and understand what the Torah is trying to communicate, then we'll be rewarded in our own lives. What does it mean? It's very remarkable the circumstances required in order for this young man to qualify as a Ben Sora Umor. If the parents do not have the same voice, Torah says they have to have the same kol. Now, men and women never have the same voice exactly. Same voice means it's a tone. There's some sort of unity between the parents. There's harmony in the home. Neither of the parents can be an amputee. Different, they have to be measured, they have to be compatible with each other. Any of these circumstances, he's automatically not a Ben Sora Umura. You know what the Torah is telling us, Rabosai? Torah is telling us that if there's any trauma at all in this young man's life, he cannot be blamed for his behavior. It's only if he's been raised under perfect circumstances, that means, number one, he is from Chicago. That is number one, right? So that already disqualifies most of the world, right? Right off the bat. He's got to be raised under perfect circumstances, with a perfect accent, with everything wonderful, wonderful parents, wonderful situation, no trauma in his life. It doesn't exist. There's never such a... Every child has some sort of trauma. So what's the Torah telling us? I think the Torah is telling us is that when we see the youth are struggling, There's no such thing as a rotten Yiddish kid. There's no such thing. It doesn't work. That means that there's a problem, and it's our job to try to rectify that problem. Fine, let's get to the root of the problem and find it. We have to do whatever we can. Don't make it a subject. There's no hope for him. Says, Kol ha-matzol nefesh achas mi-Yisrael, ki lehitzo olam olay. Right? Most people understand ki lehitzo olam olay. You saved the Jewish life. You saved them that you got the schus of the whole world, which is true. But I saw Reb Blumenfeld, the Mashgiach of the Beit Zion in Eretz Yisrael, he used to say about the boys that he worked with. He'd look at them and I'd call them matzol nefesh achas ki lehitzo olam olay. Every single Jew is an olam molay. Every Jew is like, this child, he's got limitless potential over here. He's an olam molay over here. And therefore, the Torah is telling us, there was a young man came to one of these yeshivas for struggling youth. So he came walking in, and there was a young rav there, and he said to him, he asked him about his background. The young man said, look, I come from home, but I don't do anything. I haven't done anything. I don't put on tefillin. I don't daven, nothing. I don't keep Shabbos, anything. He says, you know what, about 6 weeks ago I tried not smoking on Shabbos. And I tried not smoking. So I went about 4 or 5 hours I didn't smoke. And I said, no, forget about that. And I started to lit up a cigarette also. I wasn't going to struggle. I wasn't going to torture myself. So this Rav says to him, I want to make you a deal. You know, as well as I do, that your Mechal Shabbos, there's accountability. There are consequences. You know that. You come from that background. I want to make a deal with you. I will gladly take all of the negative consequences that are coming to you for violating, for desecrating Shabbos, on one condition, that you give me the reward that you're going to get for those 4 or 5 hours that you didn't smoke because you were keeping Shabbos. The young man looks at him and goes, I mean, what's the big deal? It's only 4 or 5 hours. He says, what's the big deal? I'll tell you what the big deal is. During those 4 or 5 hours that you weren't smoking, do you know that the Malochei Ashores were dancing around and they were pointing and saying, look, there's a young Jewish boy, a young man who is keeping Shabbos at a level of Mesiras Nefesh. I'll gladly take the schar, I'll gladly take the onesh, if you'll also give me the schar. The young man stopped smoking, the young man became Shomer Shabbos. So there's no hope. We have to do whatever we can. And over there was one sentence. That's all it took was one sentence. Torah is telling you guys, Ben Soru Mora. If his perfect life, everything is perfect around him, then there's obviously it's rotten to the core. But since that doesn't exist, lahaya lohiya, because everybody's got some sort of something rattling him, something that caused him to go off, therefore it's our job to reach out and try to bring them back. Then the Torah says, and this is really the main one I want to get to, there are several more, but this is really the main one, but I think there's an important lesson for all of us here. When it comes to the Perek Zayin, Perek Chof Beis, Pasuk Zayin, Ki korei kan sipor lefanecha b'chol, b'derech b'choleitz al oretz, efrochim ha-beitzim, v'emur v'betzah efrochim ha-beitzim, lo sikah ha-chaim al-abonim. Don't take the mother with the children. Shaleach teshalach ha-seim. The famous myth of Shiloh ha-kein. You gotta send away the mother bird. Okay. Most of us get our eggs fresh at the supermarket. We have different levels of eggs. And I know in the United States there's a jumbo, you know, all sorts of eggs. When you're walking along, I doubt if anyone here has ever, even if we some have fulfilled the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKen, once in a while it happens, you know, he's on the window ledge or something, there's a shiloh, it isn't. I doubt there's anybody here who would eat the egg. You know, whatever else you do, there are poskim will say that even if you're not going to eat the egg, you should make the kinyan on the eggs. Exeris HaKosov would make a kinyan on the eggs, on the chicklets. I once did Shiloh HaKen years ago on our balcony in Eretz Yisrael. There's some sort of pigeon or something that laid a couple of eggs there. And I asked the poskim, he said to mafkir the balcony and only do it during the day because the fathers are there during the night, because the fathers are during the day. The whole... all the ins and outs of Shiloh HaKen. Okay, but there were pigeons, and then the eggs hatched, so there were chicklets already. I'm nervous around living creatures. So I had one of the guys from the yeshiva come up, because I was going to send away the mother bird. I had just had him come up and stand next to me with a broom, in case this man-eating pigeon attacks me. So he stood there with the broom, and as I reached for it, the mother flew away, and I picked up the chicklets. You know, I was more afraid than they were. They're looking at me, and I'm looking at them. I picked them up and put them down. Then we left them. Eventually, they grew up and flew away. Okay. What's the Torah want? What's the idea? Okay, so Chazal talk about there's a kosov and it's not rachamim when the person says kalkansipur yagur rachamecha. So we mashtikin also because it's a gzera. So I saw one of the portion because they gave a time for the mitzvah. One of the portion says like this: in the ancient world, you got a freebie. You're walking along, you know, nowadays, if somebody gives out, you know, if there are free Danishes in the back of the shul, you know, the Jews are there. You know, so imagine in the old world, you're walking along and you got some pretty good, they're good, fresh eggs over there, fresh chicken. You're going to take it. It's free. It's considered an easy mitzvah. Because I'll say it's an easy mitzvah because there's no chisar and keys. We think about an easy mitzvah. An easy mitzvah, sukkah is an easy mitzvah, as I'll say. Okay, in England, I guess it's a little bit different. In the United States, it's an easy mitzvah. You got to build a sukkah and you got to put up. Easy. No chisar and keys. Doesn't cost you anything. That's what Chazal call easy. Okay. You have a shulach haken over here. An easy mitzvah. Says the Mefarshim, why don't you think about other people a little bit? You're about to take the eggs. You're going to take the mother bird. Send off the mother bird. Don't take the entire nest and prevent others from benefiting from this bird as well. Think about other people. There are other people in the world. Let the mother go. Let her lay more eggs and raise more chicks. Let other people benefit. Why do we only have to think about ourselves? Therefore, the Torah is telling you, don't take the whole thing. Other ideas as well. But the Torah, one of worship says it. I think the extension of this is, it took me a while. I came to a conclusion. We all daven. We daven three times a day, daven on Shabbos. We're always in shul. Shul's our second home. After many years, I realized, I came to a conclusion, and I say this almost tongue-in-cheek, but not totally. I genuinely believe this. I think that shul, when you go to shul, shul isn't for davening. Shul is also for davening. But I think that primarily shul is a midos workshop. Because when you go to shul, there's always something that could irritate us. Now, just stop and think about it. You know, I walk into shul, first thing, there's somebody sitting in my makom kavua. I guess I walk into the shul, somebody's sitting in my makom. You know, I get the kind of, your heart kind of drops. Somebody's sitting in your makom kavua. So there are three types of people. There's the one person who just walks over to him. He goes, shh, you're in my makom. Kind of thumb him out. Then you got the other person, the tzaddik, who walks all the way to the other side of the shul, sits somewhere else, don't want to let him sit there. He's sitting in your place. Then you got the beinoni. The beinoni is the guy who walks past several times. He walks back and forth. May clear his throat loudly. And then when the guy looks up, he goes, oh, is this your... No, sit there, sit. Because if I'm going to be a tzaddik, I want him to at least know that I'm a tzaddik. What good does it do to sit on the other side of the shul? So, you know, a person comes in, and he's sitting in my makom. So already, you know, heart drops. So you go and he sits, okay, I'll sit somewhere else. The minute you sit down, somebody else comes to you. Shh, you're in my makom. Right? So you go over to the next place, and you go, sitting by the window. The guy says, can we close the window? I'm too cold. Right? Hot, cold, windows. They said, by the way, Derech Agav, Rashim Shin Pinkus, that's all his son said his Levaya. Never in his life did he see his father open a window that somebody else had closed or close a window that somebody else had opened. Now that's already science fiction. That's science fiction. You married such a thing. So somebody's sitting in my seat. I got a guy next to me davening too loud. The Shleach Tzibur is going too fast. The Shleach Tzibur is going too slow. The guy behind me, there's somebody sitting right in front of the bookshelf. You have somebody else whose jaw is shaking a shtender and then boom, once in a while he loses control. It's right in the back of the neck. And Sukkot, there's, you know, you always are, there's the kid behind you who pokes you in the back of the neck with the lulav as you do Hoshanas. There's a kid in front of you who pokes you in the eye as you're doing Hoshanas. Yeah. So I always tell people, stay away from children when they're holding, because they hold the lulav right at shoulder level. We go to shul, there are so many things that could irritate us in shul. So first I ask myself, what am I really doing in shul? Am I in shul to daven, or am I in shul to do the Ratzon Hashem? I'm in shul to do the Ratzon Hashem. And the Ratzon Hashem is, there are other people in my world. There are other people here. There could be an argument over who's going to be Shleach Tzibur, an Aliyah, a Yortzeit. Oh, there's no end. I'm telling you, if you stop and think about it, the list is absolutely endless. The list. Then you go into the Ezra's Nashim to learn. But then a woman walks in, so you immediately have to leave. Yeah, and you got to come back to the shul. Yeah, you understand? It's absolutely endless. I believe that part of the idea of going to shul, why does the Kodesh Baruch Hu require men to go to shul? Yeah, grow women, they daven at home, they have a natural connection. We go to shul because we need the minyan. We need the benefit of the minyan to motivate. So a man davens at home, so we know what it looks like when a man davening at home. He kind of has the pajamas on, you know, he's got the sitter open, he's got the newspaper next to him, he's got his whatever it is. You know, that's how a man does. When the ladies daven, they daven, you know, they always hold it, they hold a sitter like this. Even from the youngest age, a little girl davens, she davens intense kavana. Remember my 7-year-old daughter davens, she's davening, she says every word on the page. You know, the kavana she has reading the skips and the sitter, I'm telling you, I should have that kavana on the ila on Yom Kippur, you know. Yeah, oh, the Yalav Yavo, Andrit say, ah, it's not Shabbos. It's like, oh, it doesn't matter, it's printed. You say the whole thing. It makes no difference. A man, we need it. We need it to be in a show. We need the motivation. We need a little bit of help. Okay? But we also need it because we have to learn to deal with other people. I was once in Kollel Chazanish in Bnei Brak. And I go in to get a bracha from Reb Chaim Kanievsky. We're going back years ago. I went to get a bracha from Reb Chaim Kanievsky Shlita. Okay, I got a bracha. It was about 5 to 1. 1 o'clock, they daven mincha. Okay, so I saw there's a shtender there. I said, daven Shimon Esrei. And as I finished, I noticed as I started Shimon Esrei, Reb Chaim Kanievsky was davening in the aisle, right by the window. There was an aisle. And he said, take 3 steps. He starts davening in the aisle. I'm thinking to myself, you know, strange that Reb Chaim doesn't have a seat in the kollel. You know, he's davening in the aisle. I mean, it's not people davening in the aisle. Whatever. There's nowhere else in the shul. The whole shul is empty. People stand right in the aisle. There's another thing to put on the list. Right in the aisle. Okay. So Reb Chaim's davening in the aisle by the window. Okay. I finished when I was ready. Starts Chazar Zashatz. And I'm listening to Chazar Zashatz. I was kind of leaning on my shtender just like this, listening to Chazar Zashatz. And one of the Avrechim in the kollel walks past me, and he does like this. So I just went, Ma? He goes, So Rav Ossi, you have the rare schus of meeting somebody who has taken Reb Chaim Kanievsky's makom kavua. Now, Reb Chaim Kanievsky knew the halachas, right? He knows that you're supposed to daven in your dalet amos, that we all know all the halachas. He didn't say a word to me. He knows the halacha very well, better than we do. He knows how, didn't say a word. Okay, somebody's sitting there, number one. Number two, we're so makpid on our makom kavua. I don't understand. Somebody's in your makom, that means you came late to shul. So all of a sudden, that halacha you're makpid on, that halacha we're makpid on, halacha, because they, all of a sudden that we're makpid on, or we're makpid on, it's not that I'm my makom kavua. It's my makom kavua, right? The big M. Therefore, I believe that shul, that's what the Torah teaches when it comes to shilacha came as well. Why do I have to take it all for myself? There are other people in my world. Leave the mother. Let her produce for others. Let others benefit as well. The possibly the most bizarre mitzvah, or again, when I say bizarre, I mean from a human perspective. The Torah says, you know, they go off to war. And the Torah says in Chof Gimel, Per Chof Gimel, Pasuk Yedalet, the Torah says there's a certain piece of equipment that the Jewish men have to have when they go off to war. They have to have some sort of shovel, right? A spade. The Torah says, V'yoseid perichof yol posi yadal, V'yoseid tielecha alan zeinecha. You should have a spade among your equipment. V'hoya b'shivtecha chutz. When you relieve yourself, V'chafarta b'v'shavta b'chisisa se'esecha. When you relieve yourself, cover it over. That's what the Torah says. Okay, Chazal Darshan, that the fingers are shaped like pegs in order to go into our ears, so that if somebody starts speaking, that our fingers are shaped like pegs, and azeinecha is from the word oznaim, ears, that a person, if he's going to hear Lashon Hara, put your fingers in here. Sometimes people don't know, somebody's about to say Lashon Hara, how do you get out of that situation? How do you get out of a situation somebody's about to speak? So one of the tactful ways is just to say to the person, I've been listening to too much Lashon Hara lately, maybe we should speak about something else. So we blame ourselves. That's one of the tactful ways to do it. If that doesn't work, so put your fingers in your ears. Most people get that. You know, when you go like this, most people get it. Talk about the fingers are in the... Okay. But I want to ask you, do you know of any other armies in the world that have a shovel? Because as they go in to destroy the enemy, they want to be very considerate of others as they go in. You know, very polite. Let's cover over the Yosek, the Chisisa Seasech. I don't think that the Russians, when they invaded Berlin... I don't think that shovels were the number one piece of equipment that they had when they went and pulverized Berlin. And I don't think that the Iraqis, when they invaded Kuwait, I don't think it was, okay, fellas, you know, you got a rifle and you got handheld launchers, and make sure you bring the shovels out of consideration. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to inconvenience anybody. I mean, come on, what's the Torah telling you so here? The answer is like this. Remember the beginning of the Parsha. Connects to the beginning of Parsha very much, because the beginning of Parsha is talking about men going to war. And the Torah says that when you go to war, and we're talking about the tzaddikim, a person who goes to war and they're victorious, they're in a completely different mindset. They're in a mindset of conquest, a mindset of victory. They're almost subhuman. Because you've gone to war, you've tasted blood, you've emerged victorious, everything is permissible. Comes along the Torah and says war is very dangerous, not just physically. War is dangerous for a person because a person shifts gears. Emotion. A person turns into something, could turn into a savage when he go to war. You've been killing, you've been chopping, you've been stabbing, blowing up. You go to war, Torah says, Jews go to war, we fight war differently. You go to war, you need a reminder of your humanity. So every few hours, when you have to relieve yourself, we're going to give you a reminder of your humanity. You know what that reminder is? Take a shovel with you. And then when you have to take care of your very human needs, this will be the reminder that you are ultimately a human being. So a person comes and says, that's what I meant to do during war. How can I possibly? That's what I got on my head when I go to war. That's what I'm going to be thinking about. What's the answer? Exactly what we said earlier. The answer is, oh yeah. You know how I know? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said you could do it. You know how we know? Because when it comes to the Yifas Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was matir it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wasn't matir to just go wildly, rampant wildness and just behave like an animal. That he didn't matter. That he requires, that means we're capable of doing it. Therefore the Torah says, that's later on, we'll also see. The Torah says, don't chop down fruit-producing trees when you go to war. What did the tree ever do to you? When you're going off to war, you know, what we're going to say, excuse me, Mr. Tree, I'm looking for human victims. So anyway, how can the Torah demand it? The answer is, that's exactly what the Torah demands. The Torah demands that we have to behave like human beings. Finally, the idea of not lending with interest. Now, when the Torah says, Perikov Gimel Posukhov, it says, Osashich Lachicha Neshech Kesev Neshech Ochel Neshech Kol Dover Sheyichachach. You know, it's a very famous question here. What's wrong with interest? What is wrong with interest? The entire world works on interest. All banks, all financial operations are based on it. What's wrong with interest? Why? Logically, you're going to take my money and make money with it. So if you're going to take money and make my money with it, so I should make money. Doesn't make any sense that you should take my money, you'll make money with it, I'm the one who's going to take the loss. What sense does that make? There are two answers over here. There are two answers over what's wrong with interest. Number one, the basic answer, obviously, is that the person who borrows with interest, eventually he's going to get stung and it feels like snake venom, that it's a small amount and a percentage and so on and so forth. Next thing you know, he's paying a tremendous amount of money. That's the basic idea. But even if the lender wants, the borrower wants to pay interest, the Torah says the lender is now still not allowed to take interest. So there, why? So there, one of the approaches here is that not only interest is not good for the borrower, interest isn't good for the lender. Because the lender loses his midas habitachon. The whole idea of making parnasa and struggling in the gzeira of the zeyas apecha tocha lechem, that a person has to work, worry about his parnasa. I mean, mele he's going to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please, Rav Hashem, I need parnasa, I need siyata d'shmaya. The easiest parnasa in the world is lending with interest, because there's very little overhead. All you need is a little bit of money and a couple of thugs to break the knees of the people who don't pay back. Very little, just buy them raw meat, and that's your entire overhead. And it's an easy parnasa. You sit home, open up envelopes stuffed with cash. That's the entire thing. And therefore you lose your connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hasaponim, the Gemara says in Kedushin. Hasaponim, Ruban Hasidim. The sea travelers were very pious people. Most sea travelers are pious people. I mean, you look at the old sailors, never struck us as being very pious. You know, they were, but you know, they know there was a certain level of piety, because in the old days, especially when boats would go off the edge of the earth, and it off the edge of it, right? It was dangerous in the sea. They estimate, I once saw a figure, do you know how many ships, seafaring vessels, they estimate are at the bottoms of the various oceans in the world since the beginning of time? I once saw a figure. They answer 3 million. 3 million. Okay, that probably includes canoes. You know, it's not all treasure. But the bottom line is, it was precarious. They davened, they had a strong connection. Every time there was a storm at sea, they davened. Ruban Hasidim. Hasidim means they're connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Person who is a lender with interest loses that connection because his parnassah is so secure. Therefore, the Torah says not to do it. It's bad for the lender, bad for the borrower. But ultimately, the whole world does it. And not only that, we're allowed to be involved with interest with non-Jews. So why is it that the Torah prohibits? The answer is that you're right. You're right, according to this approach. Theoretically, there's nothing wrong with it. That's the way the world operates. But if your brother, that's if your friend, if somebody down the block, if a business acquaintance asked for you a loan, then you would lend them with interest. What would happen if your brother came to ask you for a loan? Would you lend your brother with interest? A family's different. Your mother comes to borrow with interest. Would you have to charge your mother interest? Family's different. Klai Yisrael's a mishpacha. Klai Yisrael's a family. A Jew comes to borrow from you. You're my brother. You're my family. I got to charge you interest. I had a guy in Shir once. We were talking. We were learning about ribbis, And I mentioned this, and one guy goes, oh, I let my mother, I charged her interest. Yeah. I think to myself, there's nothing I can do with him except take him back in a barn and give him a whooping. Right? What punished me? A guy lends his mother with interest? God, can you imagine such a thing? Klal Yisrael, we're brothers. It's a family. Klal Yisrael is united. So you're right. Even if you argue objectively, there's nothing wrong with interest. The whole world operates on interest. Yeah, the whole world is not related to each other. We are expected to treat family different. We treat family different, therefore the Torah says, no, it's not interest.